I'm Bill Littlefield. Baylor University's football program is back in the news for all the wrong reasons. That's where we're going to start on this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know. My guests are Mike Pesca, he's the host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist, and Julie DeCaro, a host at Chicago's 670 The Score. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for having us.
Julie, please begin for us.
Well, a new Title IX lawsuit was filed against Baylor this week. This is the seventh Title IX case filed against the school. This one alleges that eight football players took turns raping Jane Doe after she was drugged by the players. It also alleges a lot of things we haven't heard before, like that gang rapes were used as bonding experiences by the players, particularly to haze freshman players. It also alleges there's a 21-second video of two students being gang raped by players that was circulated by the team. It also alleges systemic harassment of the victims by the players, that there was a dogfighting ring going on between the players in which dogs were injured severely. And it also has some pretty disheartening responses from Art Briles. For example, when this woman apparently reported being gang raped by players, head coach Art Briles reportedly said, "Those are bad dudes. Why is she hanging around with those guys?" There have now been 17 victims to date who have come forward accusing 19 players of rape. Another lawsuit alleges that there were 52 acts of rape by 31 players. Two players so far have been convicted of sexual assault. Two are awaiting trial. Two more have been indicted on charges of a gang rape in 2013. So I guess the question is, if the NCAA is not going to give the death penalty to a program like Baylor, what is the point and purpose of having the death penalty at all?
I think that the death penalty, when they gave it to SMU, which is the time it was administered, it was seen as an overreaction, too much punishment, because the NCAA is not in the business of not having teams play football. They want teams to play football. It's just that they have toothless enforcement mechanisms. I just can't believe that Baylor, and I'm not calling them hypocrites, but they're a very religious school that did not allow dancing until about 20 years ago. Look at thyself. Look at thyself, Baylor. Is football so important and so fundamental to who you are and what you do that this isn't absolutely shameful? I know the team's getting better than it used to be, but my God, I would think so many students and faculty and people who believe in the Baylor mission would literally say, my God.
I have to agree with you, Mike. It's one thing to say, well, the NCAA should shut the program down. I certainly think the NCAA should, for the safety of all concerned. But Baylor should shut the program down. And that's so obvious that it seems to me remarkable that it hasn't already happened.
Speaking of SMU, which Mike brought up, you know, that was over a slush fund. A slush fund for players. This, we're talking about gang rapes and dogfighting rings. You know, and one of the things that this complaint does very well is it documents exactly how much money was coming in because of the football team and because they were winning, and how much alumni donations were up and how much the boosters were bringing in. So, you know, it just seems to be the tale as old as time that money matters more than people when it comes to sports.
And could I just point out a horrifying fact? One of the plaintiffs in this case is known as Elizabeth Doe because they ran out of Jane Does. There were so many Jane Does, Jane Doe 1, 9, 10, that they had to get a new name. This is how deep it goes.
I'm going to turn to a far, far less significant topic. The Celtics have the number one pick in the upcoming NBA draft via a deal that Boston made several years ago with the Nets. The Nets got two old players, albeit Hall of Famers, Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. The Celtics got future picks among them, as it turns out, the number one pick this time around. Probably not the worst trade ever, because who knows how many Nets fans bought tickets to see Garnett and Pierce play in their new building. But I'm open to suggestions for trades with results as lopsided as this one has turned out to be, Mike.
Well, let's go back to the new building. Remember, it wasn't even so much to get people to see the Nets in the new building. It was to build a new building so that the businesses around the building, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, would benefit the owner of the Nets, who really only cared about building the Target and the Best Buy. I know, I live three blocks from there. And the Nets' Russian owner was very happy to leverage the future of his franchise. And by the way, if we're investigating Putin connections, I say we look into the Nets. I don't know if you need a special prosecutor or special counsel, but if LeVar Ball or Foles goes to the Celtics number one, maybe there'll be a clamor to get one.
See, I thought this was going to be kind of a frivolous topic, and you've taken it into all sorts of intriguing territory. Julie, where are you going to go with this?
Well, you know, I sort of went outside the NBA, and when I think of the worst trades ever, I cannot help but think of Herschel Walker to the Vikings. the Cowboys got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and about a million picks from Minnesota. And then Herschel Walker plays for about 2 years for the Vikings, never rushes for 1,000 yards again, and then quits to go join the U.S. bobsled team.
Okay, well, I think that's probably a viable candidate. Mike, I'm going to pass this over to you now. I think I should, for doing that, I should get an assist. And be assured, I do want to be credited with an assist. Is that okay with you?
The assist is fine, and you should be credited to being part of your way onto the triple-double. But I was thinking about stats because, you know, the actual humans are off-putting to me, and I like numbers. So the triple-double is not a horrible statistic, but when you really think about what the triple-double is, it's a disparate bunch of stats. Every point is a point. Some assists is just dishing it to a guy right under the hoop, but some assists are passing it to a guy who dribbles twice, makes a shake-and-bake move, and does all the work himself. And then you have rebounds, which are both an offensive and defensive stat, so it's kind of a hodgepodge. It's just that stats, as much as I love them, sometimes confuse and befuddle us. And that brings me to baseball and the stat of the save. I have no ill will towards the man, a sports writer who invented the save, but the save is a dumb statistic. And paying relief pitchers as the last one in the game for earning saves, the fact that there's a monetary value to this dumb statistic, warps the game. It warps our perception of the game. It warps payroll. Luckily, some people are rethinking the save in a way much more complicated than just who was the last guy in who struck the other guy out, but actually much more accurate.
Julie, may I say, save us?
I'll try. I actually feel the same way about wins in baseball as Mike does about saves. I think it's just an absolutely useless stat that pretty much measures what the team is doing around someone. But the stat that really grinds my gears in basketball is player efficiency rating, PER, which has sort of become the catch-all for how good a player is. And my problem with it is that it doesn't incorporate any reliable defensive stats. So two-way players get punished and ranked lower than guys who focus solely on offense and don't really play defense.
Every time I hear a discussion like this, I'm reminded of the great Willie Mays quote. Somebody pointed out to Willie Mays that a player who came along well after Willie had retired had gotten 40 home runs and 40 stolen bases in the same year. And he said, you know, Willie, you did that 1 year. And Willie Mays said, gee, if I'd known it was such a big deal, I would have done it every year. It wouldn't have been that hard to do. The baseball, I've given up. I don't understand baseball statistics anymore, and it seems to me you need higher math to even figure out what those Saber people are talking about. And I realize I sound like I'm about to say get off my lawn, and I can't help it. That's where I am on that one. But, Mike, do you feel you've made some converts here, or do you still have work to do?
Well, if Julie doesn't like the win and I don't like the save, I leave the hold to you, Bill. Defend the hold. It's the only other. It's actually worse than the other two. It's just like a guy who was in the game who didn't blow it. Great.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, could be applied to all manner of professions. Yeah. He's been working a long time and he hasn't been fired. Give him an award. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Julie DeCaro from Chicago's 670 The Score and Mike Pesca. He's the host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist. Thank you, both of you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Bill.